Hello and welcome to Solved or Unsolved. This is a podcast where we talk about true crimes. I'm your host, Brent. And if you want to know more about me and more about the podcast, go to solvedorunsolved.com. There you can find out anything you want. Also, send me an email, any questions or comments. And if you would, please follow me on social media. I really would appreciate that. In this episode, episode number 10, we're going to talk about the disappearance of Sheila and Catherine Lyon. Sheila is 10-year-old and Catherine is 12. They're sisters. And this happened back in 1975. This is probably one you've never heard of. This is actually dealing with a cold case. It takes over 40 years to solve this case. It started out in March the 25th of 1975. It was spring break, or spring vacation they called it. The girls were out of school, and they were going to go to the local mall and just spend the day, spend some time. The mall was about a half a mile from the girls' home, so they were walking to the mall. Now, things are a little different. This is 1975. You know, you really wouldn't want to do that nowadays the way things are, but this was a different time. People did it all the time. They wanted to go to the mall. They wanted to see the some Easter exhibits. And they wanted to have lunch at a place called the Orange Bowl, which was basically the eating place in that was near the mall or inside the mall. Now, their mom told them that they had to be back by 4 p.m. Here's some facts that we know of that day of what happened. At between 11 and 12 o'clock, not for certain, but it's in between that time, the two girls left on their way to walk to the mall. At 1 o'clock, a neighbor girl sees the girls outside of the Orange Bowl talking to an unidentified man. At 2 o'clock, the girl's older brother sees them eating pizza at the Orange Bowl where they were having lunch. At 2:30 to 3 o'clock, a friend sees the girls westward bound on a street that would take them back to their house from the mall. So according to this, between 2:30 and 3, the girls are on a road walking back toward their house. Now, they're still right there at the mall, but they're heading in that direction. The way I pictured it, maybe just like right outside the parking lot, one of the roads that goes right to the mall, they're seen right there. And then again at 4 o'clock when the mom told them to be home, they're not at home. At 7 p.m., the police are called and they start their search and they start their investigation of the case. So this is a really big deal. You have a 10 and 12-year-old sisters going to the mall to spend the day and never return home. The search is huge, of course. Actually, the governor of the state, it was in Maryland, deployed 122 I believe it was National Guardsmen to help with the search. This went on for days and days and weeks. Now, we got a few leads right here with just a timeline with what I've told you. Now, at 1 o'clock, I said a neighbor girl sees the girls talking just right outside the Orange Bowl where they're eating to an unidentified man. Well, this girl is able to describe this man very good. She said he's 6 feet tall, between 50 and 60 years old. He's wearing a brown suit with a briefcase with a tape recorder inside the briefcase. Now, you know, this is 1975. A tape recorder was a big deal. A lot of people didn't have them. From what I gathered, he was walking around and had an index card he would give to young girls with some writing on it, like a answering machine message, and would have them read it off and record it. Now, I don't know if he was doing some kind of business. Yeah, this sounds fishy. Also, and not sure of the time frame, but between 1 and 3 o'clock when the girls were seen leaving the mall, a friend of the Lyon girls saw a man, described him as white, long hair. She said he was in his late teens or early 20s. Had acne on his face and some scars on his left cheek. She says she noticed this gentleman because he stared at the girls a whole lot and very inappropriately. Said it made her feel uncomfortable. She actually went to approach the man and he walked off. So this girl noticed that something wasn't right. This man was giving way too much attention to the sisters. Now, I've said this, I think, in past episodes, but in all my investigations, most of the time when I dealt with a female, whether it be assault and battery or a sexual assault, something such as that, a lot of times in the interview, they would tell me I had a bad feeling, I knew something didn't feel right. I think that women have an extra sense that men do when it comes to survival with things such as that. It's happened a lot of times, a lot of interviews. Well, it just didn't feel right, but I went anyway. Or just, I think women have an extra sense than men do. So women, listen to that sense. Listen to what your mind is telling you. If it doesn't feel right, get out of there. So the police get out a composite sketch of the gentleman that's 6 foot, the brown suit with the briefcase and the tape recorder in it. They get it out. They put it into the paper. Well, the same day that it's put in the paper, the description of the man carrying the briefcase with the audio cassette recorder and the microphone, a gentleman named Lloyd Welch, he returned. He went to the Wheaton Plaza Mall and told a security guard that he had evidence for this case. He said that he had seen a man with a tape recorder talking to the two girls and later forcing the girls into a car and driving off. Well, of course, the police are very interested in this, and they go and get Mr. Welch, and they take him to a nearby police station to interview him. So they interview him, and his story's not really adding up. They give him a polygraph test, and they told him that he had failed the test. And he admitted that he provided false information about witnessing the abduction, never really gave a reason why. Maybe just he wanted some publicity. Maybe he wanted to be the big guy that solved it or something. They talked to him for a while and said, this guy's full of crap, and he was released by the police. About 2 weeks after their disappearance, a witness in Virginia reported seeing two girls that resembled Sheila and Catherine in the rear of a beige, this is being very specific, 1968 Ford station wagon. The witness stated that the girls were bound and gagged in the vehicle and said that the driver of the station wagon resembled the man that in the sketch of the in his 60s in the brown suit, that guy. The witness said that he ran a red light and sped off toward the interstate when it was very apparent that the witness was following the vehicle. The witness did get a partial tag of DMT6, but did not get the last two digits. Now, today, if you get that much of a tag, they have the capability of getting all the information and finding out who it was. Back then, they did not have that ability to do so. They did not have the computers that we do and the technology we have today. So nothing ever really came up of that. They didn't know, you know, that they couldn't run all owners of 1968 beige Ford station wagons in this area. They couldn't do that. So nothing ever happened of that. So you got a witness stating, I saw two girls that was bound and gagged. Driver looked like the guy that was put in the paper as the person who possibly did this. Followed him. He ran some red lights, got rid of me. That was it. Nothing was ever done at that point. They ran out of leads to follow anything else. And there were a lot of things going on. There were psychics calling in saying that they knew what happened. There were even extortionists that would call in. John Lyon, what was the girl's father, leave $10,000 inside a briefcase at this place and you'll get the girls back. And Mr. Lyon would, at this one guy, he said, well, let me hear the girls. Let me hear them on the phone and then I'll do this. And he said, hold on, I'll call you back. Never called back. It was just, you get a lot of con artist scam stuff going on. It's crazy in these times how people try to extort money. It's just, so the case just goes cold. There's nothing done, no new leads. Followed up everything that they thought were the leads at that time. Completely goes cold. And they start a cold case unit, I think it's in 2013, where they're looking at this case again, almost 40 years later. And the people are looking at it, you know, with new eyes. It makes a big difference that they'll look over all the paperwork, all the interviews, and see if someone missed something. And they finally, they start talking about, do you remember Mr. Welch, the one that did the false report that said that he saw the guy with the tape recorder push the girls into the car? They get to looking at him, and he becomes a person of interest in this case. At the time, he was 18 years old. And since then, he's been convicted of rapes in three other states. And they got to looking at the sketch, the profile of the person that was seen as paying too much attention to the sisters. Well, he matched that description perfectly. So it was in September 2014, they get a search warrant for the woods in, I think it's Thaxton, Virginia. And they entered a home, which was Welch's parents' home. But at the time, Welch lived in the basement. So they do the search warrant, and they found some evidence that was really, you know, of course, 40 years, too degraded for any DNA or anything like that. But in one room of the basement had enough significant evidence of blood. And one of the detectives used the word as slaughtered to describe the scene. So Welch is now the prime suspect. All this is starting to sort of add up. Lloyd Welch is the one that had did the fake report that said he saw the girls pushed into the car. He's also, since this time, has been convicted of rapes in three other states. He fits the profile perfectly of the person that was paying too much attention to the sisters. So they're really hot on Lloyd Welch now. You know, where he lived at that time, lots of blood evidence in the basement of where he lived. So they go out and they're really on it now. So they go out and talk to Welch's cousins. It's Connie Akers and Henry Parker. They lived in the mountains at that time of some property that the Welches owned. His mom and dad owned some property up there. And they told the authorities that Welch made an unexpected visit around the time that the girls disappeared. Just showed up. He hardly ever showed up. He just showed up out of the blue. And Henry Parker said that that he helped Welch remove two army-style duffel bags from the trunk of a vehicle back when he was 18 years old, whenever the girls went missing. He stated that the bags weighed about 60 to 70 pounds and smelled like death. That was his words. They smelled like death. The bags were covered in red stains. Both bags were thrown into a fire that was located there on the property. And Connie Akers, the other cousin, recalled that Lloyd Welch asked her to wash his clothes, which were, they had red stains and smelled like, she said, rotten meat. So here you have 40 years later, some new investigators get in on it and really finding some good stuff. I mean, you're sitting here thinking now, oh, wow, they've got this, but why didn't it happen back then? Investigations have changed a lot. I started law enforcement in 1992, and a lot of things have changed even from 92 to now. Imagine going back to 1975. They didn't have DNA. The interview and interrogation techniques have changed tremendously. They didn't follow up on things like they should have. You know, if you remember, Lloyd Welch is the one that came in and said, I saw this guy in the brown suit throw the girls in the car. I gave him a polygraph. He failed. They thought he was lying. He was just full of bull. And they released him and never talked to him again. Well, he should have been looked into in depth at that point. Then they would have found out that his parents owned property up in a secluded wooded area that's nearby where the girls disappeared. They could have went and talked to this Connie Akers and Henry Parker, cousins that lived there. They could have then found out about the duffel bags, the bloody clothes, things such as that. But I'm just grateful that there are cold case units now that, that can finally, with different techniques, different mindsets, can finally now solve crimes that were unsolvable at the time. Now, in July of 2015, Welch, he was already serving a lengthy sentence in Delaware for child molestation conviction. He was indicted on first-degree felony murder for his involvement in the deaths of Catherine and Sheila Lyon. In September of 2017, Welch pled guilty to two counts of first-degree murder for the abduction and killing of Catherine and Sheila Lyons. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your family and friends. They can listen to it on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, pretty much anywhere that podcaster listens to, or they can go to solved or unsolved.com. You can listen to all the podcasts there. Again, thank you so much for listening.